Okay, we are on page Kuf Mem Aleph, which is page 381 in the top numbers. We're at about 10 lines from the bottom of the page. The first word in the lines.
281.
Oh, I said 381. Is Yishma Devarav. The first word in the line. Umashikas of Malakid Sharta is the Hebrew. Around here someplace.
We're here.
And in the English, it is. As for the compiler writing Sharta, we're talking about anger. But actually, we're not talking about anger. We're talking about things that are written in Sivas HaRevash by the Baal Shem Tov, that he wrote this thing about anger and having it be similar to idolatry. And he gave the example in this last week of a non-Jew who was bothering a person during davening. And said that person doesn't have any free choice. A person only has free choice when it involves something to do with their mitzvahs. And there's nothing involved with the mitzvah of a non-Jew talking to somebody while the Jew is davening Shemayin Esrei. So therefore, he has no choice that he's talking to you. It is only a test from the Almighty to see if you're going to be able to focus. Because this is the effect that the Divine Presence can have in this world. Okay, and this is the way which Hashem relates to us, so therefore you can't get angry. So now he's going to deal with a technical question. Umashikaz Malakit Sharta, he uses the word the compiler, because Tzivas HaRevash, he's going to say right now, was not written by the Baal Shem Tov. It's called Tzava is the last will and testament, but it is not the last will and testament of the Baal Shem Tov. It is one person sat down and heard various aphorisms from the Baal Shem Tov and put them into a book and called them the last will and testament of the Baal Shem Tov. But the Baal Shem Tov never wrote anything. He did it posthumously, and it's all very 100% acceptable. Everything that he writes there that the Baal Shem Tov said, the Baal Shem Tov did indeed say it. So he writes there that the Divine Presence rests even on a non-Jew. It says the word sharta, when he writes it into Hebrew, is Loidea Lekavan Halashin Bediktuk. The compiler wasn't translating accurately. Ki Baal Shem Tov Zal Haya Omer Divrei Torah Belashon Yiddish. Because the Baal Shem Tov, who did not write anything, spoke in Yiddish, Velo Belashon HaKadosh, and he did not speak in Hebrew. When he said, probably most likely the word that was said, since we do not have existant, the original Yiddish either, is the word was probably most likely arayin gitan, which arayin gitan means nislabsha, enclosed. Now it's an interesting thing that there's no original writings of the Baal Shem Tov. There is a story that one of the Chevra Kedisha of the Mesitra Magid was a person known as Der Valper. I think he came from the city of Valpo or something like that. I don't remember what his name was. He took the passing of the Mesitra Magid very, very hard. And he became a drunk. He just started self-medicating. And he'd knock a good couple of shots back. And before he would pass out, he would just start talking very deep Hasidic concepts. They would just come like flowing out of him. Okay, he was the caliber of the Alter Rebbe, but he's a drunk. So he came into, I think it was Liadi, unannounced. He walked around, he was like a bum, a drunk, people knew his. They called him the Shikr, you know, this type of thing. And there's one chassid whose name escapes me, figured it out that this person must be Der Valper, must be this student of the Mesitra Magid. So the Valper got sloshed. He passed out, and this chassid started rifling through his knapsack. The Valper wakes up and says, "Ganef, what are you doing?" So he said, "I'm looking for Ksavim." Meaning, I'm looking for things that were written down of what happened when the Mesitra Magid. So he said to him, because he said to the word in Yiddish, petach, which means you simpleton. We didn't write things down. We remember them. You have to write things down. So he said, oh yeah, you remember? Tell me what you remember. So the guy, the Volpe, in a drunken stupor, just started spewing. Okay, tremendous deep insights from the Mizutra Magid. And then afterwards he picked up his knapsack and he took off. He says, if you know who I am, I'm leaving. Not only people, you know, hounding me for you know, you're going to sit down and for bring with me? No, I'm not interested. So the word got back to the Altered Rebbe that he had been in town, and he said, it's a pity we could have brought him back. So things were not, maybe it was discouraged, you might say, because in how many years, 14 years of the Mizutra Magid being Rebbe, so we have three small books, which are all put into one compendium volume, which is Lukuti Torah Magid Dvorav Yaakov. It's printed by the Torah. It comes up, it's in a one-volume set, printed by Kahos. It sits on most people's shelves, and right next to the Kester Shem Tov. So, because people didn't write things down. They remembered them. So here he's saying that when he wanted to write this down, so he's taking a Yiddish word, and he didn't really understand what it was the Baal Shem Tov was trying to convey, and he wrote the word sharta, that the divine presence dwells on klippa, when he should have said nislabsha, when it should have said enclosed in klippa. When the divine presence is enclosed in klippa, that's called galus. Which is oba prad im hu goy, and this is for sure if the person is a non-Jew. Sha'azhu b'chin is galus b'yoyse, that then the divine presence is even more in exile. Period. Ve'eila t'mua im nitzis min ha'ar asar shchina nikr b'shem shchina. And you shouldn't worry that that this is what we're talking about is the shchina, because the shchina is diminuted through the creation process. And he says, even into dirt. We talked about dirt a couple of weeks ago. How great it is that the divine presence is manifest in dirt and the power that's given to dirt. Vashkachan shafilu malach nivra nikra b'shem Hashem b'parshas vayera l'perash haramban. We see that even an angel, which an angel recognizes its own existence, is called by the name Hashem. It's given the name Hashem or Elohim for sure, as we see in Parshas Vayera. And the Ramban explains it there. Vatikra Shem Hashem Hadever Aleha. And he called the name of Hashem who was speaking to her. And there are many instances where angels in the Bible are called Hashem. Because what are they doing is they're conveying godliness directly.
They can't change us.
They can't do a thing.
But Kadumali, yeah. What they're told.
Yeah, Okadaimali, and it would seem to me, Shetai Sassan, that when they chose whatever word they word, they ate a lashon. It wasn't as regards to carefully translating Elema Iker Inyan Hislapshus Ashkina Beklippa. But what they're trying to convey is that the divine presence does even enliven klippa, which is a very good thing to say. Even if you want to say, wait a minute, klippa is in opposition to Hashem, so you want to tell me that a spark of holiness is within Hashem, of Hashem is within klippa. So the answer is yeah, because what's the alternative? The alternative, say, would be to say that Hashem is not enlivening klippa. So that means klippa has its own life force. So that would mean that klippa is also Hashem? No, so we can't say that.
It's Christianity.
Yeah, exactly. We can't do that. No. Okay, and it's talked about, I saw an interesting pirush in regards to Parshas Ki Siso, where Hashem tells Moshe how the Jewish people should really be doing tshuva. That's really what all that dialogue back and forth between Hashem and Moshe is. Is Hashem's kind of coaching, laying down an outline. This is, oh, by the way, this is how you do tshuva. So I saw, I don't remember exactly which commentary I saw it in, but there's a statement in the Zohar that b'makom shebali tshuva eindim, the place where bali tshuva stands, ein tzadikim gemurim yacholim la'amad sham. Even a totally perfect righteous tzaddik can't stand there. He can't reach there, because what's the deal? You have a person who did something wrong. Let's say they ate a ham sandwich, Chas V'Shalom. Then what happens, it says, that tshuva ma'ava nasas dainis lok hizachyos. That if a person did tshuva out of a feeling of a love of Hashem, not out of a fear of Hashem he's going to get smacked, but out of a love that he realized now what he did distanced him from Hashem, and now he wants to stay close to Hashem, and he feels that he's going to get closer to Hashem. So what happens then is that, what's the purpose of a mitzvah? Mitzvah is to create a relationship with Hashem. So here, what is it that's creating the relationship with Hashem is the fact that he did something wrong. He sees what it is to do something wrong, and he doesn't want to do it again. So now he's closer to Hashem. So it says, so what happened then is the godliness within the ham sandwich becomes elevated, because it's the ham sandwich which was the vehicle which brought him closer to Hashem. Of course, always the caveat, you cannot walk out and say, I'm going to eat a ham sandwich so I can get closer to Hashem later, because that's called Echta Ve'eshuv, I will sin and I'll do tshuva. And it says, Eimah speaking on Elasis tshuva. And it says, God says, I'm not hearing that. You're not going to do that one. Because now, what is it? Why is it that the guy's doing something wrong is only because of tshuva. So that's, the tshuva becomes abominable. But we see that what? A ham sandwich happens to be enlivened by Hashem. And there is Kedusha in a ham sandwich. It's stuck in such a way that we can't elevate it. Okay, that's why it says Kizachyos. That a person does tshuva from Ahava, his merits are kizachyos. They're like, his sins are like merits. Not that his sins become merits, because he did eat pork, and it is going to have its negative effect on him. But when he did tshuva, so he's able to remove the kedusha from it. What about the stuff he couldn't remove? That's still stuck in klipa. That's still stuck in his body. That's not coming back. Not until Mashiach comes. Okay, so
they can't stand there because they never had the ham.
That's right. Tzaddik can't reach that. Yeah, Tzaddik can't reach that level of being that close to Hashem from not eating a ham sandwich because he didn't eat the ham sandwich. Okay, whereas the Baal Tshuva did. Yeah, Shein Hamona Kamosha Kosov Harizal, the Rizal writes in Sefer Gilgulim, Shem Yirsa Lachalik Ben Klippas Haruchnian La'omas Ha'olam Hagashmian Ein Lech Hagashmi Ka'af Ha'aris. If you want to say that the spiritual Klippa is alive and by Hashem, but the Goyim are not. But we said before that even dirt has godliness in it, and for sure dirt is on a lower level even than a non-Jew. The FLP came is labeshes by malchus the malchus desia, but still, even though dirt is so low, what's manifest in it is the level of malchus of asia of kedusha. Ubetaycha malchus the yitzira, and in this low level of malchus, there's the next level of malchus of the world of emanation, etc., all the way going up to chachma of atzilus, which now through this whole process is manifest in the dirt. So if you want to say that it's stuck in Gullus because of the impurity of the souls of the non-Jews, that their souls are a product of the masculine and feminine aspects of Klippa, Haruchnian, Kemosha Kosov Arizal. So if that be the case, then that a Goy is getting its source from Ruchnius too, from spirituality too, which is obvious. So it comes out that spirituality is the source of their tumah. And you should be able, therefore, to say that the soul of a non-Jew is also has a soul of Kedusha, which would be true. He said, this topic of the holiness or the sanctity of a Jew, of a non-Jewish soul, requires tremendous explanation. Ehu his lavshizu, how it is that Hashem is manifest in the soul of a non-Jew. But our question would therefore be, that we'd be discussing, would be a question that the Arizal brought up. He's going to say, and I'm only trying to explain the Baal Shem Tov. Va'al yichad sheno shemeya sha'ani be'enei she'havanti divi ha'ariza lehapshata megash miyusin. And he says,
wow.
Yes. And anybody who hears will suspect me that I imagine to have understood the words of the Arizal in their simple meaning. And if the Alter Rebbe is saying, wow. and who am I to understand the writing of the Arizal? It's like, well,
not us.
I should understand the writings of the Arizal as well as the Alter Rebbe didn't understand them.
Wow.
So he says, I'm not going into the whole thing with the Arizal and the problems you're going to have with Seder Istalshelus and non-Jews and Klippa and all that stuff. That's not my purpose in writing this letter. I'm only trying to explain what the Baal Shem Tov wrote. Al pi Kabbalah's Harizal, which the Baal Shem Tov explained his thing according to the Kabbalah of the Arizal. So it's an interesting thing. There's one of the commentaries in Tanya. There are very few commentaries in Tanya, in this part of the Tanya. It's most people, when they write commentaries, so they get really, you know, the first couple of chapters is like, there's like a zillion commentaries. Mm-hmm. They're all over. I got a whole shelf. Okay, when it starts, but as you know, it's a monumental task, and as it gets further along, so there's less and less and less people who write it. So there's a commentary called Halekach V'Halibub, which, if you want to get me a birthday present, you find me volume 1. Okay. It's been out of print for 45 years. So it's probably available on HebrewBooks.com.
Tell me when I go to Bookstock, because I found a Sefer Devorah.
Toma Devorah.
I found a Toma Devorah from 1960, though.
Okay, there's lots of those. You know,
but so. I haven't seen one in town until I found it there.
Okay. I have one sitting on my shelf I got somewhere. I think also got from Bookstock.
Very good.
Anyway,
yeah.
So
it's written by
a Mashpia from Lubavitch Yeshiva. His name was Alexander Sender Yudis.
145-page intro. That's amazing. But that's the point.
I'm familiar with the book, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So so he writes that he came across... An erudite scholar of Polish Hasidus. And they were having a discussion about this letter with the Baal Shem Tov. And the Polish Hasid explained that the Polish, the Galitziana, the Hungarian Rebbeim had a certain approach to the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. And the Alter Rebbe had, and the teachers, the Rebbes of Chabad, have a whole different approach to the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. And specifically when it comes to disseminating the Kabbalistic concepts that the Baal Shem Tov used to convey his thoughts. Now we have, there's a sicha that the Rebbe said for Yutes Kislev, I'm not sure, I don't remember what year it is. It was put into a separate pamphlet by itself called Kuncha Shel Inyana HaChasidus, which means the pamphlet of Hasidic matters. And it was translated into English, I think in 1978, I think it was translated, and it's called The Essence of Hasidus. And there the Rebbe explained what is the purpose of Hasidus, how is Hasidus function? Okay, it is it's mandatory reading for anybody who wants to understand Hasidus, especially Chabad Hasidus. So he says, one of the things that he says over there is that the purpose of writing Hasidus was not to explain Kabbalah. The Baal Shem Tov did not make up the Hasidic doctrine in order to popularize Kabbalistic concepts. The purpose of Hasidus is to excite all parts of the Torah, meaning in Pshat, Remesh, Jus, and Said, and if it happened to be that the part of the process of making any one of those things exciting, and it required a Kabbalistic concept, so the Baal Shem Tov was not afraid to use a Kabbalistic concept. But not that the Baal Shem Tov was coming to try and explain Kabbalah to the masses. This was one of the worries of the Misnagdim, because Shabtai Tzvi used Kabbalistic concepts to convince his followers that he was Mashiach. And what happened? Four boats got let off, or whatever. The Nina Min, the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Marina. They went off to Eretz Yisrael, and they all became Muslims. You know, so they were the word. There was a valid worry, suspect, that the Baal Shem Tov's teachings, including these Kabbalistic concepts, that like, let a guy learn Aleph Beis before you teach him about Atzilus, was something that was going to lead people astray. So the Polish Hasidus kind of tends to tone that down, the Kabbalistic concepts. In Kedushas Levi, and in Toldos Yaakov Yosef, and Noam Elimelech, all of those bigger Hasidic works from Poland and around there. So the things that are explained are more like drashas. Something nice, a nice thing you'd say on Shabbos. You know, something you say at the Shabbos table, a nice vart, this type of stuff, and you can go with this. But whereas Chabad Hasidus tends to really hammer into concepts like this, like Seder Istalshelus and Amuna and Hashem's relationship with Hashem. So Alexander Sender Yudison writes that the Polish Chassid was correct, and that the Chabad considers itself to be the torchbearers of the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov and Mezuzah Magid. And everybody else is basically just punted on the idea. As is explained, I think he wrote his commentary before The Essence of Chassidus was written.
No, I never realized that. I thought it was... I didn't really understand the Chabad versus typical Chassidus.
There are other nuances.
And I don't even understand any of the Chassidus. It's like, what's this one's different from that one? I wouldn't know.
Yeah. So, anyway. Thank you. There's actually Shlomo Karlbach's twin brother. His name was Eli Chaim Karlbach. He had a shul in Hillside, New Jersey. I was bar mitzvahed in his shul because his shul was around the corner from where my grandmother lived in Hillside, New Jersey. He wrote several sfarim. I don't know what they're called. They used to have them on the shelf in Morristown, in the yeshiva there. His deal with his books is he took Polish Chassidus and explained it using the methodology of Chabad Chassidus. So it's very interesting stuff. I in the long summer months, if I had nothing, I'd take a copy of his book off and kind of like thumb through, because it was done by Parshas and these things. Because I had my bar mitzvah in his shul.
Right.
Even though this thing is something which is from the wisdom of the Kabbalah, which is from the hidden part to us, and only those things which are revealed to us and are to us to believe, Amuna Shalema B'mikra Malia Kosov Adavar. But the verse still says, Halo Esa Shamayim V'Esa Aris Ani Mali Nuhum Hashem. The verse says, I fill the world and the heaven and the earth, says Hashem. She'ein mikri yaitzi midei pshuta, that the pasuk doesn't go out of a little translation. You want to explain it this way with this kind of allegory, or this type of drusha, or this type of esoteric insight. It says, Hashem fills the land. It doesn't say sits on top. Hashem fills the land. That means even in dirt, you're going to have the spark of godliness. And every single person actually believes this. Is there any Jew who's going to say, you know, Hashem can't get into the earth, it's too far down? No. Even the simplest Jew is going to say, you're not going to find God by digging holes, but there is Hashem even underneath the soil that we're walking upon. That would be like, duh, of course. And it has been given over from our holy forefathers, Shahalchu b'tamimis im Hashem, that they went with sincerity with Hashem. B'li l'chakir seichel anushi inyan alakus asher hu l'mayla ma'aseichel. That they went, they understood, l'avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, didn't have many problems. Why? They didn't ask questions.
I thought they had problems. Yaakov didn't have problems?
They didn't have problems. I'm talking about the problems with Elikus.
No.
Yaakov, by the way, didn't have problems. Okay? Because what's a problem? Problem is only a problem when you make it a problem. Okay? It's like I tell people, what's define the word problem for me.
Boy, this is tough now. Problem is only a problem when you make it a problem.
Yeah. Forget I said that.
Everything is...
Define the word problem. If you were Merriam-Webster...
I can't. I like solving problems. I think they're good.
Okay, so what are you solving? What's a problem?
An unknown.
Probably you have these unknowns. Okay, people ask me, is this Chassidus hard?
If it wasn't for problems, I wouldn't have a job.
Yeah, okay, good. So you ask me, is Chassidus hard? So the answer is, rocket science is not hard if you understand it. Right? It's only hard if you don't understand it. If you understand it, it's not hard. So Chassidus is, if you understand it, it's not hard. If you don't understand it, yeah, of course, you're talking over my head. Okay, but if you're going to get a really good teacher who's going to explain to you, you know, jet propulsion and all the theory behind it, and he's going to put it into, like, you know, a graphic novel, then a lot of people would understand rocket science. Okay, so what are we talking about over here? But over here, the problems. Okay. So I tell people, problems means there's a situation that warrants dealing with. It needs your attention. And if you don't lend it your attention, there's going to be serious negative consequences, right? That's generally the idea of what a problem is. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I tell you, there are serious situations that you have to deal with that you don't consider problems. Like, for example, breathing 20 times a minute. Everybody needs to breathe 20 times a minute. And for the vast majority of the world, this is not a problem. But this is something that's very serious, because if a person decides, you know what, I'm not going to bother breathing 20 times a minute this minute. Okay, he'll do that 3 or 4 minutes. He's not going to have anything else to do. Mm-hmm. That's very serious. You need to breathe 20 times a minute. Right. But it's never a problem for anybody.
Unless they leave the planet.
Yeah, okay. Or they have COPD or one of those things, yes. Then we understand. But under normal circumstances, it's not a problem because we're not giving it our attention. We're just doing what needs to get done. So Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov didn't have problems. There were situations where things needed to get done. It wasn't a problem. It was a situation.
Hard part is when Yosef was gone for 22 years.
Okay, well...
How did Yaakov...
He did get depressed, yeah. He missed the guy, so... But... It was in a situation where there was no questioning of Hashem. There was this was part of, he understood this was his life.
He lost the Ruach HaKodesh, though. I thought that's Midrash, at least. That's where I'm having trouble with it. Like,
okay. Let me ask you, when was the last time you experienced Ruach HaKodesh?
Never.
Okay, so...
Well, I think on Rosh Hashanah, but I won't tell anyone.
Do you consider that a problem, that you've never had Ruach HaKodesh?
I wasn't worthy.
Do you consider it a problem that you've never had Ruach HaKodesh? No. So, it's not a problem.
Not since the second temple. I don't think it's a
problem. Yeah, you know, so.
It's not right. Okay.
Ashehulam ma'ilam ha'seichel v'inkev. So, shehalcha b'tamimus, that these people went with sincerity, with Hashem, b'li l'chaker b'seichel anushi inyan ha'lakus, that they didn't try to figure out God. Ashehulam ma'ilam ha'seichel, that Hashem is beyond figuring out. Ad ein keitz, to no end. L'yayda eichu malik al ha'aretz, to sit back and you're going to start analyzing how it is Hashem fills the world. Scientists might get it into their head. You know, we finally see that there has to be Hashem. They may get there one day. So now what they're going to work is, well, so now that we got that the
goes on Hicks.
Yeah. Now that we have it, so now the question becomes, well, how? How do you get God into this world? Okay? By looking at dirt, I really don't think you're gonna get to God. You know, although they do postulate that the smallest particles of these energy pods, which are nothing more than little tiny sparks of energy. So we said that every molecule has, everything Hashem creates, it's got a spark of Kedusha to it. So they're calling it energy. Well, maybe we'll call it Hashem. Who knows? They haven't seen it anyway, so they're just speculating.
No, some weird statistic is that if you weighed the internet is a bunch of electrons traveling. Okay. It's even it's when it's stored, it's just stored electrons.
Right.
If you weigh the entire internet, it'd be a couple ounces.
Okay. That much?
Maybe. I mean, be generous.
I thought maybe you were going to say it wouldn't even fill a teaspoon. You
know, well, so. It's almost like nothing.
Yeah.
Like, that's it? You know, it's like, you know, get billions of books. Or,
okay.
Or, yeah.
It's like nothing. Yes. Rak shechashadim kekarev ba'u lechakir b'chakirizu. But new people have recently come.
New ones, yeah.
Yes.
I'm looking at the commentary.
Parsha Deuteronomy 32:17. Oh, the new people have come is where the pasuk is from.
Oh.
Okay, I was wondering if you can say who the new ones were, but that wouldn't happen. The Chakira Zu into this whole philosophical argument. And it'd be impossible to explain this whole idea of why a person shouldn't get angry if you did not first preface it with the writings of the Rizal, Mushatas Begashnis, which have nothing to do with the physical world at all. And I have heard from my holy teachers. It would be impossible for me to explain this in full. In writing, but you'll choose somebody who has a good understanding, and I can explain it to them. And to the remnants who Hashem calls. And also, as it's written, those who search Hashem will understand, kol, everything, ubeklal zeh, Hashemei hein. And if you'll understand the positive, you can understand that if you're not looking for Hashem, you're not going to understand anything. So he says, you'll come to me, this is after we just spent 9 pages. Mm-hmm. He says, oh, by the way, I can't really fully explain this in this medium. It would be so much easier if I could talk to you about it. So you'll send somebody to talk to me who can understand what I'm talking about, and then they can explain it to you. So it says, you have seen as an explanation a passage from well-known books. Again, I don't know which books he's talking about. For example, for this example, Higam kol ha-maimarim t'meim yesh lehem pirish ubir heitiv li'edichem. If there's something that you don't understand in all of the books of the writings of the Arizal, I got news for you. There is an explanation for it. For those people who don't know how to explain it. But to explain all these things down, how to understand it, how to convey the Kabbalistic concepts, and this whole idea of not becoming angry, I can't really put it more and better into. I've basically used up enough paper. Rocking tears. There's Shalcha Mekem Echad Miyuchad Shebaida. If you want, you'll send some special person from your community. Upeh Alpeh Adaber Boyim Yirtz Hashem. And God willing, I'll speak to him face to face. I wonder why it's Peh Alpeh, not Punim El Punim. But he says face to face, but it's Peh Alpeh. That's punim el punim. Maybe it's punim el punim. Maybe. V'Hashem yiyim ki behetifu v'hirotzen imrei fi. And I will talk to him. Yeah, and Hashem may be with my mouth when the words flow out, and may the utterances of my mouth find favor with Hashem. It's just, we said that for Shemana Esther, which is a
positive. The end of Shemana Esther.
Yeah, so if that be the case then, so what are we left with? Bottom line of this letter was that you really have no reason to get angry. Because everything is Hashgacha Pratis, and specifically if it's something that you have no control over, then there really is no reason for you to get angry. And even if it involves other people doing whatever they're doing, that if they don't have freedom of choice, then there's no reason to get angry at them. We gave this example, like you can get angry at a two-year-old. The two-year-old doesn't know. What's to get angry? So these people that are doing what they're doing, okay, you know, so do they need to suffer consequences? If they need to suffer consequences, let them suffer consequences. There's no reason to get angry. And that is the end of chapter 25. To be continued.